Ganesh Cheesh for being here with us today. You are listening to the music of Matt Herskowitz, one of the headliners this week at the Fall Juno Jazz and Classics Festival. This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. One fan of Matt Herskowitz, Bob Rose, who produces the Heart of the Piano podcast, describes him as, quite simply, one of the most skillful, versatile, and soulful pianists on the planet. And somehow Matt Herskowitz has distilled the sounds of both classical music and jazz and turned them into magic. He's originally from New York, now based in Canada. And Matt, welcome to Juno. So good to have you here at our KTOO studios.
Thank you. Thanks, Rhonda. It's great to be here.
And I understand, just in talking with you, that you have a two-year-old son that you're leaving behind at home.
I do. Yeah. In fact, we're going to FaceTime right after the interview. It's 4 hours later there.
Well, thanks for coming all this way, leaving your family to give us a real treat at the Juno Jazz and Classics concert.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Hey, it's the life, right? And it's, you know, that's what it is. And we just plan in advance and then everything works.
Oh, that's a good way to look at it. It's good to be flexible. Maybe that's the hallmark of a jazz musician. But I did want to ask you, because you mentioned that you had a son who was 2 years old.
Yeah.
And I've heard the story that kind of your love affair with piano began at 2 years old.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. I didn't actually get a piano until I was seven. But I had like a little toy plastic organ. And I knew like from somewhere between two and three that I wanted to be a pianist.
How does a two-year-old know they want to be a pianist?
Well, I heard it. I heard it. My mom used to play me old Van Cliburn records that weren't so old at the time. They were new. And, you know, she played me that to put me to sleep. And instead of putting me to sleep, I'd listen to the whole thing and then put the needle back and listen to it again. And over and over. So, like, I was like, yeah, this is what I want to do. I'm a pianist. Like, it's just, I don't know.
What a great story to
Apparently.
Share with us. But you've got a two-year-old now. So he doesn't have to listen to Van Cliburn. He can listen to you.
That's right. He can listen to Mama, too. She's a pianist as well, a classical pianist.
So the two of you, it sounds like, are getting your start into parenting fairly late in life. What's that like to have a two-year-old?
Well, it's interesting because it's a little after the the sort of when you're really primed, like chemically and hormonally, to have a kid, you know, and you really feel that drive. This sort of after that drive has passed, and it's like, I'm having a kid, and you're much more chill going into it, and you do a lot more research, and you know, it's you're more mature about the whole thing, and you're more prepared. And so that there's a lot of benefits to having a child later, and you have a lot more patience, which is perhaps the most key thing. You're not constantly running off trying to hustle and make your career. You know, you've arrived at a certain place. The hustle is kind of over. You're now doing your thing, and that helps a lot because you can focus a lot more on the kid, and you can focus a lot more on the family.
Well, to have the kind of technical virtuosity that you have, and other musicians that we're going to be hearing performing at Juno Jazz and Classics this week, I can't imagine that you have time for a lot of things, that a lot of time to yourself for a personal life, perhaps.
Yeah, well, it's working out so that there's a good mix of time at home and time away. Like the balance is good. If I were doing any more touring and traveling for performing, it would take me away from my son in his most his most formative years, and I want to be there for that.
Yeah, they're only 2 years old once.
Yeah, I mean, they're only yours for a certain amount of time, and then, you know, they start to become their own little people, and they're like not as attached to you anymore.
So what's your son's name?
Raphael.
Raphael. Yeah. And so is he showing any signs of interest in music?
He is. He loves violin.
How does he know that at 2 years old?
Because he saw videos of actually the girl that I the woman I played concert with last night, Lara St. John. He saw some videos of her on Google. He discovered it, and he just kept watching him over and over again. And he picked up his toy ukulele, tucked it under his chin, and took out his plastic recorder and started bowing it.
No.
So, like, we were like, okay, this kid wants a violin.
Well, I had my son's music teacher, tell me that you cannot choose your child's instrument as much as you think you want to, that they will choose their own.
No, they choose it themselves. That's absolutely true. It's a very personal choice. The piano was my personal choice. And I never wavered from that. I wasn't like, oh, do I want piano or oboe or clarinet or cello or trombone? No, it was just always the piano.
But everybody always tells you when you're young that the piano is a good instrument for starters because through the piano you can experience the whole orchestra.
That's right. And basic keyboard skills are, you know, something you can use no matter what you end up playing afterwards or what you end up doing.
So how did you make the transition from playing classical music, you know, the Van Cliburn music that sucked you in to jazz?
Romantic music, yeah. Well, I had always been playing Gershwin and ragtime. I really love that stuff. I had a teacher when I was young that got me into that, and I loved that. I loved the old Gershwin songs and rags, Scott Joplin. So, like, I was always into that. When I was a teenager going to school in Philadelphia at Curtis Institute for Classical, my roommate was a clarinetist there, but he was also a jazz saxophonist. And he got me, like, I would come along and do, like, jam sessions. And then they had jam sessions at my apartment sometimes because I had a piano there, courtesy of the school. And it was great. I mean, so I would be like jamming with them, but like I knew a little, but I didn't really know what I was doing. So I started, I just was interested. I was like, yeah, I want to get into jazz. So I started listening a lot, and that's the best way to learn. I was listening to people, you know, my favorite jazz pianists at the time, you know, Oscar Peterson, Chick Corea, Keith Jarrett, Bill Evans, you know, Marion McPartland. I just soaked it up and, you know, transcribed and learned the jazz harmonic language. And that I learned pretty quickly, the jazz harmonic language. And I started improvising. My improvisation sounded honestly like a classical guy improvising over jazz chords. It was kind of weird. But then it got more jazzy as I went on and I learned more and, you know, I never really learned with licks. Like I didn't – so my jazz playing always sounded unique, but at least it – you know, I was incorporating jazz language into my improvising.
It's interesting that, so
it was,
that you
it was
think
a process.
Of, it's interesting that you think of music as a language, that classical is one language, jazz is another language. I mean, if you were to compare them to languages, you know, what would classical music be? What would jazz be?
Yeah, well, maybe, you know, classical music, for me, it's either German or French or Russian, you know, and jazz maybe is like Bulgarian, Spanish, could be... You know, Greek, anything like rhythmic, you know, Italian, you know, something. I mean, Italian is a classical language as well. I'm thinking of like an Eastern European language that that has, you know, real, like, is kind of rhythmic, rhythmic based, and, you know, something. Yeah, languages are not really improvised in the same way, but just the feel of it, you know, like I feel like you know, Hungarian, you know, or it's Bulgarian, it's like, that seems, that feels like it, you know, and French feels like a very classical, you know, language to me. So it's basically like that. Like, all languages have the same base, right? The classical music shares the same elements as jazz. It shares the same notes. It shares the same harmony. It shares the same way of constructing music, melody and harmony. It's just what we do with each is very different. I've just noticed there are Chopin chords all over jazz. I would say the biggest relation, that the closest relation between them is obviously French music. You know, we have Ravel, you know, heavily influenced by jazz, and they just went together really well. His friendship with Gershwin, you know, made him, and he was interested in that before, in his second violin sonata. There's a movement called blues, which is his take on blues. It's really cool. And there was a guy named Louis-Moreau Gottschalk that wrote kind of jazz, jazz world music, you know, back in the time of Chopin. In fact, he Chopin was at his recital in Paris, and, you know, this guy was already incorporating jazz language and rhythms. So it's they are, you know, it's all like, you know, like language, it's variations on a theme. And for that reason, there's no reason to keep them separate anymore. You have the history of classical as a separate thing and the history of jazz as a separate thing. But going forward now, do they really have to be separate?
Well, that's what I was going to ask you about, because we have this Juno Jazz and Classics Festival, which is a tradition of combining the genres. How unusual is that? I mean, we feel it's pretty special here. How common is it to do this?
Well, it's getting there. But, you know, you guys are still a little bit on the cutting edge here, because there's not a lot of places there's not as many as you would think that are doing it. There's a few festivals in Europe that have been doing it for a while, where the same festival will have classical artists, jazz artists, world music artists, you know, all together. But it's relatively rare, but they want to. And I know that they want to, because I'm starting to get invited to more of these festivals.
Well, it's interesting that you are performing with different artists, because, like, you played last night with a classical violinist.
Yeah.
And I understand that
but
you're
But we did a jazz show as well. Yeah.
But you're performing with some other people here. And it seems like the theme for this festival is fusion, because you've got Shelley Watson, who mixes opera and comedy.
That's right, yep.
And you've got Simply Three, which mixes pop and classical music. So
that's right.
It's fusion, fusion, fusion.
And everything is basically fusion here, yeah.
And I understand that you went to Juilliard at the same time that Zool Bailey did. And,
that's right.
And any other performers here that are Juilliard alumnus?
Shelley
Watson is?
Yeah, yeah. We were all there together.
So what was that like to be young together, starting out in Juilliard? And have you become different people now, much different than you were?
Yes and no. I mean, we're more experienced. We're more mature. You know, probably more chill. But, yeah, it's funny, eh, when you – even if you haven't seen people for decades, it's they're not all that different, you know. They're still, it's still Zool, it's still Shelley. You know, I'm still me.
Well, Zool when he talks about his youth, said that he was obsessed with playing the cello, a love affair for him that began as a toddler as well. And he said that he spent a lot of his childhood practicing, and his parents really didn't want him to do that much practicing, but he was driven to do that. And so he missed out on a lot of fun. And so, you know, I kind of wonder, when you were in Juilliard, driven at that time, did you have much time for fun? And maybe do you have more time for fun
now? No, I had to, I did, you know. Like I was working a lot. I was playing a lot of gigs. I was playing in jazz clubs and then doing concerts and having to do my work at Juilliard. But before that, I had been in a new wave rock band in Los Angeles. So that was fun. And then before that, was at Curtis in Philadelphia. And yeah, I probably had too much fun there, you know. So I got more serious in New York, and you know.
Too much fun. Well, that's always a good thing, right? Too much fun. I want to play we run out of fun. Maybe that's for another conversation, but I wanted to play a little more of your music. It's not what you're going to be playing tonight, but Mirror Image. Can you tell us a little bit about that? We wanted to give people a sense of the range.
Sure. Well, Mirror Image is the title of this album, which was recorded and released in 2019. And it features both some classical and my compositions from a period when I was more classically influenced, but experimenting in jazz. And so I was revisiting some of those tunes and classical pieces from a more experienced jazz perspective, you know, 25 years later. And or 20 years later, and see what came out of it. And this is the result. So Mirror Image is from, you know, the early aughts, the early 2000s, and I sort of breathed a new life into it, you know, sort of updated it and used, you know, it, I got to do what a lot of artists, you know, wish they could do but don't often get to do, is like go back to old things and rework them so I'm, you know, so that they represent what I do now.
Well, let's give it a listen. My goodness, boy, that just sends me off into a dreamland here.
Good, that's yeah, it's a moody piece, a sort of evocative piece. You know, it's definitely a moody ambiance. One reviewer wrote, and I hadn't thought of this. Like, I wish I could say, yeah, that was my intent behind the album, but he said that Mirror Image represents, you know, who I am. Jazz and classical, each a mirror of each other. And I thought that was really beautiful. I wish I thought of it.
So that's not what you're playing tonight, though. You have a different lineup of things tonight.
Right. Tonight will be a lot of Gershwin, some Ravel, some of my music, and... yeah, I mean, I think that's going to be enough. But the Gershwin will include my arrangements and improvisations, for
sure. Wow, and then I guess
you're the Ravel as well.
And you're going to go to a jam session afterwards.
I'm going to go to a jam session afterwards. That'll be cool. So like, and this is something that I've done at other festivals, mostly that Zuhl is the director of. Where this happened in also in El Paso and in Sitka, where like we, you know, there was like a jam afterwards, and you know, after a concert, you go do a jazz. It's The only couple of times I've ever done that has been at Zool's festivals. And I got a look at the Crystal Saloon.
Oh,
and
isn't it
looks,
lovely?
It looks awesome. And even then, like it's only happened once in El Paso, like in 2010. And you know, now in Juneau, it's happening where like I played basically a formal concert and then went over to the jazz club. You know, this is great.
Two sides of a coin.
It's awesome.
So tonight you are playing at the Jack tonight at 7 o'clock, the Juneau Arts and Culture Center, and then followed by a jam at the Crystal Saloon. Well, Matt Herskowitz, thank you for coming to our program. We really hope you enjoy your time in Juneau, and really appreciate you coming to share your talents with us. Thanks so much.
Oh, it's such a pleasure to be in Juneau. I was here 8 years ago. It's so great to be back.
Welcome back. Thank
you
so much.